Black are gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Black Heart Gold Podcast, episode 65. Medicare eligible. Adam Jacoby. Pat and Ben.
Look out, AARP. The BHG podcast is coming.
All the retirees are joining Hamsterdam. It's a Wednesday night here. It is bye week, where Iowa's guaranteed a tie. And so we thought we'd go to our favorite other topic, conference realignment, and who better to have on to discuss the ongoing train wreck, I think is maybe a good word, the conference realignment is, than none other than Frank the Tank of Frank the Tank Slant. Frank has owned this complete issue for about a year and a half and has forgotten more about this than I think we'll ever know. Frank, how you doing tonight?
Doing very well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, good to have you. We've been trying to do this for like 6 months now, and we finally got everybody on the same page.
I've been going back and forth for quite a while here, but it's great to be on.
Well, let's start with where we stand with the implosion of the Big 12 and the potential disaster for our good friends in Ames. Jamie Pollard yesterday said something to the effect of, I had locked arms with people in the room, and those people seem to be pretty dedicated to this conference. Is the Big 12 going to survive now?
Well, I mean, I would say that the Big 12 will survive to the extent that Texas and Oklahoma want to stay in the conference. I'd be fairly surprised if Missouri ends up staying in. If they end up getting an SEC invite, which it looks like they will, I think it'd be pretty stupid for them to turn it down, considering that it looked like only a couple weeks ago that Mizzou would have been left out entirely. So, you know, if I were running things at Mizzou, I'd be leaving. But that doesn't necessarily make the conference collapse, because if Texas and Oklahoma can't go anywhere else, or it looks like they can't, then, you know, by default, the conference will survive in some shape or form.
What is Mizzou's game plan here? Is it going to be basically hold out and wait for an SEC offer if it comes, and if not, pretend that nothing happened, kind of like Oklahoma did?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really all they can do at this point. I mean, the SEC, you know, for all its money and power, really doesn't have as many options as one would think. And I think, you know, the ACC really shored themselves up with adding on Pitt and Syracuse. Those aren't really great football programs necessarily, but market-wise, in terms of stability, the ACC is actually fairly strong, since it's a pretty good academic conference, and it has a pretty strong core with Duke and UNC that's really never going to leave. So, you know, the likelihood of the SEC getting Florida State or, you know, Clemson or some other school of that nature, or Virginia Tech, is actually fairly low compared to how a lot of fans think. So really all the SEC is, you know, looking at right now is probably Missouri, maybe West Virginia. You know, they'd probably like Oklahoma if they can get OU by itself, but that may not be possible, since you know, it looks like Oklahoma is going to be tied politically to Oklahoma State no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So, the SEC doesn't necessarily want a package deal like that. So I think Missouri's in a pretty good position to get an SEC invite, because I can't really see them staying at 13 for very long. But, you know, you never know. I mean, Mizzou last year probably thought for sure that they'd be invited to the Big Ten, and, you know, some crazy things happen there.
So do you think that, this question would have been completely incomprehensible 3 years ago. But it is it is a valid question, I think, right now. Do you think the SEC's television situation, without having their own TV channel for until, what, 2020, do you think that hampers them in any way in realignment discussions?
It can, in the sense that it's probably difficult for them to monetize any expansion. I mean, it's actually hard to see how they're going to really make any money off of adding Texas A&M. There's kind of this assumption out there that the SEC can just tear up its contract with CBS and ESPN just by the mere fact that they're expanding. That's not really quite true. I mean, what's likely going to happen is that the SEC will get some type of pro rata increase over its current contract, so but the current members don't really lose any money compared to what they would have gotten before expansion, but it's not necessarily going to be a huge boon to the SEC for expanding here. So that in a sense may limit their options where, it's not a situation where they may want to go up to, say, 16 teams at this point. They may want to just go up to 14 just for long-term stability, and Texas A&M in and of itself may give some long-term value for, its large TV market down the road, and certainly football recruiting within Texas is top-notch, and, the SEC would love to have access to that.
Now, Frank, the question I guess I have, and you've kind of mentioned it a little bit already with the discussion of Missouri, there's this heavy resistance to Clemson, Florida State, Miami, Georgia Tech, schools that are already in states that have SEC teams. Is this a recruiting question? It doesn't seem like it would be a TV thing if they're on a TV deal with an external network. I don't see why they have to worry so much about markets. Is it really just a recruiting issue, or is there something here that we're not seeing?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily, I guess there's a sort of internet legend that there's a gentleman's agreement between the SEC schools that they're not going to add any additional teams or schools from states that they're already in. I don't necessarily buy that if that's true. I can see that, Florida State would be attractive to the SEC in terms of national TV games and whatnot.
But
I think it's more of, does University of Florida really want that competition in-state, whether it's for recruiting or for TV attention, those types of things. There's also kind of a difference in the culture between the SEC and the ACC as well. The SEC is mostly very large flagship, more land-grant type schools, whereas the ACC has a much larger private school contingent, generally a little higher rated academically. So it's not necessarily the case, even though they occupy the same region, that schools are really that interested in moving from one to the other.
Explain to me, because I still don't understand what the draw of adding Missouri is for the SEC if it's not just getting to 14 teams and avoiding the 13-team scheduling disaster that would be. Because here's the reason why I don't like Missouri. I can't see a single game of theirs being the SEC game of the week. Who do they play that viewers are going to want to see that the SEC doesn't already have a better matchup for every single week? What Missouri game is there that people are really going to want to see?
Right, and, it's a fair question. And for the SEC, it's much more of, are you providing a national name brand compared to a local market where, the Big Ten has a fairly direct incentive to have larger markets. Of course, that being said, they ended up adding Nebraska, which is, you know, a fairly small market, but a very large national name. So, it may be the case that Missouri is really the best option out there for the SEC if it wants to go up to 14. Certainly it does provide a couple of good-sized television markets, St. Louis and Kansas City. Has a fairly large population and recruiting base to come from. I would say that Missouri does add value when you look at kind of the second tier of games where, you know, you get access to, you know, a fairly large population base. You know, those games that you see on ESPN or might be syndicated through the SEC network, as they call it. And certainly if down the road, if the SEC ever wants to create something like a conference network, like the Big Ten has done and the Pac-12 is doing, you know, Missouri could be a value piece there.
Hmm. Now, let's shift a little bit further north to one of my favorite leagues to laugh at, the Big East. so, you know, I think everybody kind of knows the general history of Big East football. It really didn't start until the early 90s, and it kind of became a thing mostly because of Miami. But is this going to be the end of Big East football with Pitt and Syracuse leaving for the ACC? And I guess more importantly, what options does TCU have, and what options do the other schools in the Big East for football now have?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. You know, a lot of it will actually come down to what the Big 12 does. You know, and what Missouri does will actually affect a lot as to what happens to the Big East. So kind of in this strange position where, you know, a couple weeks ago we were talking about Texas and Oklahoma, these huge powers, really realigning everything, where today it's really Missouri that has kind of going to have the greatest impact as to what a whole host of leagues are going to do. Because, you know, right now, when you're looking at, you know, if the Big 12 has to replace at least one team right now, since Texas A&M is leaving, you know, they may go after someone like BYU. They're also looking at Big East schools, too. So, you know, Louisville could get picked off. There's been talk that TCU might be on the table for the Big 12. You know, mm-hmm. There's some people that say that, you know, they don't want another Texas school, as others that say that TCU is strong enough in and of itself that maybe we'll get an invite to the Big 12. There's even been talk about West Virginia going over there. So it's not Big East certainly isn't safe right now. I mean, as long as the Big 12 is looking for new members, they can easily lose one, two, or even three more schools at this point. And then, you know, who knows what's going to happen to that conference. They can't even have a viable conference to exist at that point. They don't even have enough members to do so.
Mm-hmm. So Andy Staples wrote of poor Dan Beebe that Beebe was a sacrifice to the conference realignment gods, which I thought was just a phenomenal line. Chuck Nines is there now. Is there anything that materially changes about the Big 12's position in the realignment thing and about their ability to add schools? What changes about the Big 12 now that Chuck Nines is there? And what would Nines be able to do that Dan Beebe would not be able to do?
Well, that's a pretty good question. I don't know if he can really do too much different
other than not be Dan Beebe.
Other than not being Dan Beebe. although I wish he were the Dan Beebe Twitter handle there, because that guy was awesome. But, in the sense of symbolic change, that there's a change in leadership that, you know, that may, from a perception standpoint, provide some more confidence in the Big 12 going forward. But really the stability, as I said before, of the Big 12 is about whether Texas and Oklahoma are going to be happy there. Mm-hmm. I think Texas really wants to stay. They have a Longhorn network that really can't exist in any other BCS conference. No one else would have it other than the Big 12. And
that's true.
It's a shiny new toy that they want to really exploit further. The Oklahoma is kind of a bit of a wild card because they certainly look like they're on the verge of moving to the Pac-12, but since the Pac-12 turned them down, maybe they don't have any options.
I like the characterization of Oklahoma as a wild card because that immediately conjures up a mental image of Charlie Day wearing his cowboy hat and cutting the brakes and jumping out of the back of a van, because that is precisely Oklahoma's MO. Like, they're wearing the cowboy hat. They want everyone to believe that they're Texas, but at the end of the day, they're willing to cut everybody's brakes and just jump the hell out of there.
They would. The and that's exactly true. If they could, they probably would. But as I noted before, they sort of have this anchor to them where they have to bring Oklahoma State along with wherever they want to go. So even if the SEC or even the Big Ten were interested in Oklahoma, they probably wouldn't be willing to take on Oklahoma State at the same time. So Oklahoma State, don't get me wrong, I mean, they have a pretty good fan base. They have, the T. Boone Pickens money and everything like that. But, the school that conference is really won would be Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. How close were they? I mean, really, at the end of the day, I know your theory, and I think you're right. I don't think there's any doubt really about it that the Pac-12 was playing footsie with Oklahoma in the hopes that Texas would come along with them. But I mean, how close really was it to being Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas, and Texas Tech?
Right. Probably if the Longhorn Network issue was a huge factor, and I think it was in the discussions. Probably not as close as the media made it out to be. Now, I am a bit surprised that the Pac-12 didn't just take Oklahoma and Oklahoma State without Texas at all. I thought that would have happened no matter what. The fact that Texas doesn't want to give up its network and, the Pac-12 just went through a whole slew of negotiations to get a conference network up and running, and even went to its own power schools, USC and UCLA, and got rid of unequal revenue sharing. There was actually unequal revenue sharing in the Pac-12 until this year. They got USC and UCLA on board to equal revenue sharing, and to kind of throw that all away right away for Texas probably was going to be a hard sell no matter what.
Yeah. So what do you think is the end game here? I suppose the sub question: have you ever believed in the four 16 team super conferences? And if so, do you still believe in it today?
Well, I've actually been more skeptical about 16 being the end game for everyone. I think you need schools like Texas and Notre Dame moving around in order to even contemplate, like a 16-team Big Ten and 16-team ACC and everyone else. So, we may be looking at 14 becoming kind of the standard number for now. The biggest advantage that I could see from having four 16-team super conferences is that it actually makes it very easy to implement a playoff system at that point that can actually be controlled by those four conferences. The real reason why the BECS hasn't been replaced by a playoff system at this point is because the BECS conferences, or really the AQ conferences, want to have control over the system. And if they get to a point where they can kind of break away into kind of a 64 team kind of division of the NCAA, or even, a separate entity altogether, then I can see some kind of incentive there. But as long as we're kind of operating under, this NCAA governance structure where, it doesn't make too much sense for conferences just to add more schools just to get to 16, unless it's a real huge power school like Notre Dame or Texas, and there's not really that many around there, or that many available to go around.
I guess it's time to bring this all home then, because you've already kind of hit on the issue. You've theorized that the Big Ten's tactic throughout all of this was to let the chaos reign, let the SEC pick off teams like Missouri, let the ACC go after Pitt and Syracuse, and wait for all the dust to settle under the assumption that the two schools that would be left standing would be Texas and Notre Dame begging for a spot somewhere. What do you think the Big Ten will do from here, if anything, and is this the wise strategy going forward, given what once again hasn't happened?
Right. Well, I think, at least for now, the Big Ten is going to be fairly conservative. I think you stated my position pretty clearly, is that I don't think the Big Ten is going to expand unless Notre Dame and or Texas is involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it maybe with what happens with the Big East at this point, because I really think Notre Dame doesn't want to be in a position where it's putting all of its non-football sports into maybe a Catholic school-only league or some larger version of the Atlantic 10. I mean, they really want to – they have a large, robust athletic department. It may be a situation where they have to compromise on their independence. So personally, they'll probably fight that until the death. I don't see Notre Dame giving up its independence unless it's, almost in that 4-16 team super conference situation. It's easy to say it for now. Well, the Big East is still alive and they have a viable home for all their other sports. But if it collapses within the next couple of weeks, they're going to have to reevaluate things. From the Notre Dame side, that's always kind of going to be an open issue as long as there's instability in the Big East. From the Texas side, it's gotten a lot more complicated over the past year with the advent of the Longhorn Network. Obviously, a lot of the Big Ten's powers come from having the Big Ten Network in place. And
mm-hmm.
if kind of the whole value proposition of bringing Texas on board is you add the entire state of Texas and all the households within it onto the Big Ten Network, and you have a massive moneymaker. But allowing the Longhorn Network to continue to exist either separately from the Big Ten Network, I just don't see. The Big Ten will probably take the exact same position as the Pac-12 has, you're either an equal partner with us or, it's simply not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the Big Ten has a lot of power schools in and of itself, with Ohio State and Michigan, Penn State, and now Nebraska, all of whom probably would have set up their own individual networks, in the past. But Jim Delaney was the one who actually got Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State on board with the conference network, and not in setting up their own individual networks. And, just like the Pac-12 situation, to then let Texas come in and play by different rules, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't foresee the rest of the Big Ten presidents being open to that.
Was that on the table a few years ago for individual school networks in the Big Ten? Because I had never heard any talk of that even, sort of hypothetically. But is that something that Ohio State was really thinking about?
There was actually when the first discussions about the Big Ten Network came out, there were allusions to that. Ohio State and Michigan were at least studying the possibility of that. They've been looking at it for years, but it took a lot of internal political pull for Jim Delaney to get everyone on board with having a whole conference network. Because, it's true that, schools like Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State really bring in a disproportionate amount of football revenue to the conference. Part of the thing that makes it a bit easier in the Big Ten compared to the Big 12 is that there's not really the kind of dead weight schools, to the same extent as the Big 12. I mean, really, pretty much every school in the Big Ten at least brings something to the table, whether it's, a large market like, Chicago or, Philadelphia, or, large fan bases, or, Indiana's terrible at football, but they have a tradition-rich basketball program, so Northwestern brings in academics. So there's at least – everyone at least brings something there. Schools like Michigan and Ohio State are still want access to places like Chicago and whatnot, so, they'll work with, the schools like Illinois, Northwestern, whatnot there. So it's a bit easier to have more equality in the Big Ten versus, in the Big 12's case, Texas is the largest national name. It has the largest TV markets. It has the largest state in the South. It has the best recruiting. And essentially, Texas can live on an island there. There's no other school in the Big 12, or at least any other market within the Big 12, that really does much for Texas. Mm-hmm. So, for them, it makes sense from, their rational economic standpoint to, keep everything that's, all the revenue that would be coming from their own home state, because it's just such a large percentage of the Big 12 overall.
Now, I think you and just about anybody else has looked at this as basically said that the Longhorn Network is the real pin in the grenade at this point, that without that, this all really would have all fallen apart, but this is kind of keeping everybody from jumping into it. Is there a chance that the Longhorn Network just doesn't work? I mean, I know that they're going to probably end up using the same sort of strong-arm tactic. Well, they're going to use the same strong-arm tactic that Delaney used, where we're going to put games on there and you have to get our network in order to see them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but I mean, at last check, it's on about 3 televisions throughout Texas, and so
yeah,
is there a possibility that this thing falls apart?
There's certainly a risk. I mean, it helps that they're backed by ESPN, so I could see ESPN trying to tie in maybe some of its other channels to get carriage in Texas.
Sure,
but that's a big thing: is whether or not is there enough product on the Longhorn Network itself to justify getting, very high rates and every single household there? I mean, even with the Big Ten Network, I mean, you have 12 schools at this point, and it's still hard to get enough live programming that's of interest to kind of the regular sports fan, with all those schools involved. So, you're trying to start a single network with one school. Actually, I know that the Longhorn Network's actually bringing in some games with, like University of Texas San Antonio and some of those other UT system schools as well. But generally speaking, it's really all about maybe a couple of football games a year, a handful of basketball games. And I guess baseball is a much bigger sport down in Texas. It's probably similar to like wrestling in Iowa, where it's actually a real revenue sport there.
Nothing is similar to wrestling in Iowa, my friend. Nothing.
So, I know. I guess I take that back. I know it's incomparable to anything in Iowa wrestling, but as close as you get to that, I guess. So, but yeah, I mean, there's certainly going to be some carriage issues for a while, and it doesn't help that there's these realignment problems. And I'm sure if I were a cable company down in Texas and, you know, the Big 12 is still going to implode, I mean, what's the point of signing up for the Longhorn Network right now if you don't think it's going to exist in, you know, 6 months or so?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be a drag. You know, if the Big 12 ends up surviving, I think it will. I mean, it looks like it's going to survive just simply because Texas wants it to. I think we'll see better carriage there. But it may take a year. It may take even a couple of years. I mean, for, you know, the Big Ten Network, it took a year to get basic carriage in, you know, most markets in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the Yankees network. I mean, the YES network, mm-hmm. which is really where the New York Yankees make all their money.
Right.
It wasn't shown in Manhattan for the first year of his existence. So, you know, these carriage disputes can go a long time. They're pretty vicious. We'll just see about whether or not the Longhorn Network has enough product to justify it. And it's part of the reason why they were looking to add on high school games.
Right.
To the network there is because, you know, at least in the state of Texas, showing high school football, that's actually a pretty good, you're going to draw pretty good ratings there.
Now, is that, you know, Jim Delaney already has, you know, experience with the extended carriage dispute, and although he came out on top in the Big Ten footprint, do you think that was sort of a deal breaker with Rutgers? You know, everyone talked about that, you know, my God, the media market. Do you think he just never wanted to lose a carriage dispute, and he knew that he was about to lose one in New York?
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily losing one, but yeah, I mean, if I would say this, I mean, if Rutgers or any other school, you know, Syracuse, UConn, if they could guarantee the Big Ten Network carriage in the New York market, I'm fairly certain they would have been added.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they haven't been added is a pretty indicative of kind of the low confidence that any school or even combination of schools could really get traction in New York, because it's just not a good college sports town. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's okay for college basketball, but, you know, the real revenue driver of football, I mean, arguably the two most popular football teams there are Penn State, which the Big Ten already has, and then Notre Dame, which is an independent. So, I kind of think maybe the New York market might be fool's gold for a lot of conferences.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks like just this massive, you know, population base that, you know, is untapped, but it's simply not a very good college sports culture for a whole host of different reasons. I mean, it's, you don't have kind of a, it's not really a center of graduates from large state schools like, you know, Chicago is a pro sports town, but a lot of Big Ten schools like congregate there.
That's a good point.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's no, Rutgers and UConn are really the two large flagships in that area. But there's no one else. I mean, Massachusetts, UMass hasn't even been a Division I-A school. It is starting a Division I-A program, but hasn't been that way up to this point. UConn hasn't even been a Division I-A for a decade at this point, too. So there's just not the same type of alumni base. You know, it's a lot more dispersed as well, people from all over the country moving to New York, where, you know, there's probably a good number of college football fans in number, but it's hard for any one conference or one team to get much traction there.
Does Notre Dame win that? Does Notre Dame win you the New York market?
It's the best chance. I think it can. I think that's kind of the theory, that, you know, instead of adding Rutgers, any of the other Big East teams. You know, if you really want New York, you pretty much have to get Notre Dame. And that the combo of Notre Dame plus Penn State is really the best way to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing from you, and don't correct me if I'm wrong, is St. John's, Rutgers, UMass, and Providence to the Big Ten, so they will get the New York market.
That's
our headline coming out of this one, folks. You heard it from Frank the Tank, first and only.
Don't forget about NYU and Fordham there, you know. It's like
Fordham's the keystone in this arch.
I do have one question, and it's the one that I've wanted to ask you ever since we started scheduling this thing. In this day and age of college football, where scandal runs amok everywhere, where Ohio State's in trouble and USC's in trouble and Miami's in trouble, in my opinion, it's best that we leave it to the real pros. And so I have to ask you this. Is there any scenario where SMU ends up in the Big 12? Because SMU with money is a good thing for everyone.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I get... SMU is they obviously they have a long history of issues and whatnot there. Plus Craig James, I mean you can't. the existence of Craig James himself would, if I were running the Big 12, would knock SMU off any of my lists. But you know, it's actually if. You know, putting aside their history, you know, SMU is obviously in a pretty good location, and it's probably similar to TCU in terms of its enrollment and everything. But yeah, I'm not feeling that one there.
All right, rapid fire before we let you go.
Okay.
And you will be held to every one of these yes or no answers.
By gunpoint. By gunpoint.
18 months from now, 2013, is Missouri a member of the SEC?
Yes.
Is the Big East still in existence as a football conference?
Yes.
I know you've said the Big 12 will still be in existence, you think. Does the Longhorn Network still exist at that point?
Yes, 2013, yeah. Yeah, it'll still be there.
Wow, it's basically the same steady as she goes. And will Notre Dame still be an independent at that point?
Yes.
I believe they'll still be independent too. I mean, it's not as though there'll be many changes within kind of the overall structure, but, part of the driving factor is that, you know, the Big East and the Big 12, you know, they still have their BCS bids, their auto bids. And so it's still an attractive proposition to other schools that are on the outside looking in, you know, to get the AU status. So I think that's the one thing that the Big East can hang its hat on. Plus Notre Dame wants that conference to survive too. So they're going to work to keep that together.
Last question I've got for you, and I want you to answer this honestly. I'm looking at your Twitter avatar. Are you actually Oscar Gamble?
Yeah,
answer
I used to. Yeah, I only wish I could have an afro like Oscar Gamble there. So I am a big White Sox fan. So I'm mourning the loss of Ozzie Guillen here, but. If you actually want to know my ethnicity, I'm actually half Polish and half Chinese, so that's pretty much the antithesis of Oscar Gamble, but his baseball card is legendary, and certainly he's a White Sox legend too.
Well, we'll all miss Ozzie, although I have a feeling that he'll do just fine in Florida with four fans there to watch him.
Well, it's funny that he wants to bring down like half the Chicago Cubs, too.
Right, yeah.
But he, so I'm not sure what he's thinking, but hey, he's definitely entertaining.
Yeah.
Certainly when your team has been as bad as the White Sox this year, he's at least for his conversation.
Well, we've kept you far, far longer than we had planned on doing. We want to thank Frank for coming on the show and remind all of our listeners and readers to catch him, as if you weren't already, at Frank the Tank Slant. Thanks, Frank.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.